Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Good to have you in live here on a Monday edition of the show as we are broadcasting live from Pete and Terry's Tavern at Bridgestone Arena. Today, the season gets underway for the Nashville Predators, a preseason doubleheader against the Florida Panthers. Game 1, puck drop at 3:30 today. Game 2 at 7 o'clock. And we welcome in our buddy Chris Mason, Preds TV color analyst. C-Mace, happy first of the season. How are you this morning?
Good. I missed you guys.
I missed you too. And before we actually talk some pucks and sticks here, I need to know how many takes it took for you to do that latest video where you're sitting on your porch having a conversation with your alter ego.
Oh, my God. I'll tell you, my wife is so embarrassed of me. I was walking around the house and I caught my kids are embarrassed too. I pretty much embarrassed my family, but you know what? It was worth it. And we did it pretty in a couple good takes. So. It was funny.
That's the video that gets them embarrassed, not any of the other ones? That was the one?
Trust me. I feel like I don't do a good job if I don't embarrass my family. So it's constant. They're constantly embarrassed of me. So I think that's just part of being a good husband and a father as far as I'm concerned.
I agree. You're spectacular on social media. There's no question. It all works very, very well. In fact, if you're trying to be good at social media, I recommend everyone act like C. Mason, try to be like him. Let me ask you something here, Chris. Just, I know the season hasn't started yet, so we're not anywhere close, but playing off what happened to the Titans yesterday, where you feel like you're the better team, you feel like, you know, in hockey it would probably be early third period, that's kind of the third quarter, right, of a football game. You feel like you're in control, and then all of a sudden you just start making mistake after mistake after mistake, and maybe you ice the puck or too many men on a shift change. You know, you're making mental errors. What is the player's conversation in a locker room after something like that happens when you know you let something slip away because you guys kind of made unforced errors? How do players address that?
It's tough, you know, and I can't really speak to the football side of it because their schedule, you know, they only have the 16 games, so every game is of that, you know, that much more importance. But in hockey, I think, you know, if you know you have a good team and you have one of those games, like, you know, let's be honest here, in sports, you know, going into a season, every single team, no matter what you are, you know, you're, especially in a hockey season, there's going to be a time where you're going through a tough time. You know, you're like the plays that you mentioned where you kind of give one away, and you're going to be on the other end of that too. And so I think as a player, you know, when you have a good, you know, leadership group and a good core of guys, you understand that, but you can also, you got to be accountable to each other and to your teammates, the guys who are making the mistakes. You know, you've got to be accountable to your teammates that, you know, you're going to make sure that you're not going to let that happen again, or you're not going to do that again, and you're aware that, you know, you gave up, you know, a couple costly plays or whatever. And on the other side of it, when, you know, when you're your teammate of that player, you say, hey, man, you know what, it happens to everybody. You know, that's, you know, next game we'll be ready, or next period or whatever, we'll go out and we'll redeem ourselves. And that's the good thing I think about sports, is there's always a chance for redemption. So, you know, there's going to be mistakes made. There's going to be bonehead plays that are made by the best players in the world, which are playing in these sports and hockey and football. And, you know, they got another chance to redeem themselves. It's tough to swallow, but at the end of the day, you really have to kind of let it go. You know, the old kind of learn on and learn about it and move on. So I think, you know, as a player, you've got that accountability because you're paid to make those plays. But the reality of sports and being a human being and trying things, you're going to make mistakes. So I think you can't let it eat you up is basically what I'm trying to say.
Mace, in football, if you have two quarterbacks, usually you have none. That's not the case in hockey, though, when you have two goaltenders like Pekarinen and Juuse Saros. Last year, the statistics, the splits, were virtually identical, despite Pekka having a 2-to-1 ratio in starts last year, 55 to Saros' 27. Do you expect that same ratio this year, or will we see maybe 4 or 5 less games from Pekka and obviously 4 or 5 more from Juuse?
I think you could easily see that. Obviously, you know, the season and the way things are going will have a lot to do with that. But I just think the way that this transition and the way that this relationship that these two guys have had, you couldn't really ask for anything better, because there's a lot of teams out there that have, you know, a aging starting goaltender. You know, not many that are playing at the level that Pekka Rinne continues to play at, but You know, there's no incumbent sitting there going toe to toe with your starting goaltender, and they've had the luxury of being able to ease him in and ease back some of Pekka's work. So I think you could see, chip away there and get a few more games. He certainly earned it. But having said that, Pekka continues to play at an elite level. So I just think, as for the goaltending situation for the Preds, they really, really couldn't ask for a better situation.
Chris Mason joining us here on Morning Drive. It feels like that Winnipeg is kind of trending maybe in the wrong direction, but the division as a whole, and it's certainly highlighted by what St. Louis was able to do in the second half of the season last year, is really looking from top to bottom almost like the toughest division in all of the NHL. Would you agree with that?
Oh, I would have to say, if you look at the teams in the offseason, Dallas got better, a lot better. Colorado is another year older, and they added some good pieces. They had, Cale Makar, much like we had Dante Fabro come in, and all of a sudden they're an instant player in the league. So I think this is a tough division. St. Louis, like you mentioned, the way that they played in that second half and obviously winning the Cup, they're going to be starting the year with a ton of confidence. Winnipeg, like you said, they're in shambles. I mean, can you imagine not having, Johansson, Forsberg, and your top 4D not coming back for a team that was, competing for the Central Division? They're in trouble here to start the season. So hopefully, for their sake, they can work things out. But they've got a mess to clean up. But I just think the Central Division is just it's just crazy. There's so many top teams, and it's hard to pick if you're going to pick the standings or pick the way they're going to unfold. It's probably the toughest division in the league.
See, Mace, the sort of the depth of the franchise here from a prospect standpoint is probably deeper and better than it's been in the last couple of years. I think they've done a great job restocking that. A lot of young, interesting talent. But how many, obviously you had Duchesne at the top of the list, but how many positions are actually up for grabs? I mean, it feels like outside of maybe a third defenseman or maybe a fourth line winger, I'm not sure what position is available to right now for people. It feels like the big club's in pretty good shape in that situation.
Yeah, there's not many, and that's a great point too, because I wasn't so sure on how the prospects were. I know that they did have a lot of turnover. They added a lot of guys, especially getting Pitlick in and Davies and in the trade with Subban. And I was really, really impressed with the rookies. They drafted really well. Afanasyev showed really well. I thought a lot of guys at the camp, and especially in that in the rookie tournament, when you see them against other teams' prospects, they were just fantastic. So I think they've done a good job. But to your point or to your question about the big team, there's not a lot of room. I mean, it's basically just a matter of where people are going to slot in. I don't think there's a ton of opportunity for somebody to make the team out of camp. But I mean, it's just as important, because these guys are fighting for, the first opportunity, or if someone happens to get moved, or if there's an injury. So there's still a lot at stake for these young players playing in the preseason, and this is their chance to, they showed well against the rookies, they showed well at summer camp and all that kind of stuff. Tomasino, I think he'll probably end up back in junior, but for some of these other players that are going to be playing in Milwaukee, you want to be that guy that's a first call-up. Injuries happen, we all know that, every single year. Certain situations, you want to be in that position to be a first call-up. Alex Carrier, another young player who we saw a couple of years ago, is going to captain Milwaukee. He's another guy that is really developed well and could be an NHL defenseman. But it's tough the way that this team, the personnel that they have, there's just not a lot of room right now.
Say his name one more time for me, C-Mace.
Alex Carrier?
No. Igor. Say Igor's name again for me.
Oh, Afanasyev?
Afanasyev.
Yeah, trust me. I took me about probably 20 or 30 times. We did the rookie game in summer, and I was Afanasyev? Afanasyev. we tried to make sure, so it's Afanasyev. I think I've got it down now.
Afanasyev.
Yeah, that's a right. Tough one.
He's a big kid, man. He's a good-looking player.
He is, yeah. I really like him. He's got a lot to like about his game.
Mace, final one for you. I know they were major talking points last season, and I'm assuming they will be again this year until proven otherwise. The power play and Kyle Turris. What are fair expectations from an analysis standpoint? Is it 2 weeks? Is it 20 games? Is it half a season before we know exactly what we have from both glaring issues from last year?
Well, I think, you know, I've had a year, you know, like Kyle had last year, injuries, sick. He went through, he just could never get it going. And once you get into that type of situation, it just becomes a huge weight on you. So every day you're going to the rink and it just seemed like one of those years for Kyle last year. But I think, you know, in fairness, you have to look at the big body of his work, of his career. He's a proven player. He's got skill. He's had success on the power play. I think, you know, you look for him to bounce back, and it'll be interesting to see. I know they're probably going to try some different things with line combinations in the preseason to see if they can, you know, find a, you know, if they have to break up the Jofa line and just to find two good lines that are big threats. And I think he, you know, will be in that conversation definitely for some of that. So it's on him. So I think that you could, you know, fair to look right away. I don't think a player like him that's a veteran player needs 20 games to get in. But on the other side, the power play, you know, they brought in Dan Lambert, who's a power play specialist, and that's one of the biggest things that they obviously had to address from last year, because that was their Achilles heel, I think. And it was kind of ironic that the series against Dallas ended with a power play 2 minutes left. They had a chance to, you know, to take it into back to Nashville for game 7, and it didn't. They went 0 for 15 in that series. So that's one, again, it was very similar to Kyle Turris's year. It ended up being almost just a huge weight and burden on the team every time they got a power play, and they could just never get it going. But they have too many good players, and they have too many, you know, too much talent on this team. And there's absolutely no way you can lock this in. There's absolutely no way they're going to finish at the bottom of the league again. So I think that's something, again, I think right away they should be able to come out of the gates. I don't think last season, what happened last year, has an effect on this year. I think it's a fresh start for both Kyle and the power play. I think you should look for results, you know, first 10 games.
C-Mace, great stuff as always. We appreciate the time. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
You got it. Chris Mason, Preds TV color analyst, joining us here on Morning Drive as we are live this morning from Pete and Terry's Tavern. We'll come back, continue on with some Preds conversation. We've got Carl Taylor, head coach of the Milwaukee Admirals, joining us at the bottom of the hour. We're back after this on ESPN, 102.5 The Game. All right, Smashville. Join the game, Nashville, at the second annual Preds Fest on September the 29th. That is Sunday from 2 to 6 p.m. There'll be Preds player appearances, live entertainment, a used equipment sale, and fun for the whole family. Stop by the tent and win some awesome prizes and gear. We'll talk to Carl Taylor, head coach of the Milwaukee Admirals. He'll join us coming up here on site at the bottom of the hour. The big finish at 9:45. I don't know. Did you guys see the video that Mace did where he's sitting on his porch at his house? And his alter ego is there, and they're having a conversation about getting the whole band back together.
One of them looks like he's from Whitesnake.
Yeah,
yeah. C-Mace is brilliant at social media. Like, I am not good at social media. I send out tweets, and that's it. I'm not good at that. That's about all I do. C-Mace is brilliant. He'll be wearing like an American flag like onesie and jumping in the pool or doing something crazy. Like, he's always got wigs, and C-Mace is great, man, on the socials. Good follow.
And then he gets in his truck, and he's singing. And then there's little visuals in the background of Willie Dawnick and Kara Hammer.
Right.
And then he gets to the arena, and he gets out of his truck, and he's just standing. I think it's on the other side of the arena where we did our NFL draft show on the plaza, and there's nobody there. Like, nobody got the message. He's looking at his texts, and nobody responded to him. It's kind of like me when I reach out to you guys about the show, and nobody says anything.
Hey, we respond. Hey,
that's just you, Darren.
And you guys ghost me.
We respond.
I do not ghost.
But I deserve it.
I know the University of Tennessee ghosts Dave Doran, but I do not ghost.
All right. One thing on the Preds for this season, you know, we discussed the goalies in the first half of the show. When you look at this team with the addition of Granlund, now granted we only saw him for a little stretch run after the trade deadline, but now you've added Matt Duchene. This team from top to bottom is so loaded with forward and skill players. Like, I don't know where a guy like Eli Tolvanen is going to even crack a lineup.
Yeah, and that's the key with Tolvanen. Like, it's one thing for Rem Pitlick or Rocco Grimaldi or some of these other young, talented guys to kind of find a spot on the fourth line. It's one thing, right? Especially Rem Pitlick. It's another thing for Eli Tolvanen. He's projected to be a top six forward. Well, they don't have any space on their top six right now. Now, let's not read too much into lines, but Kyle Turris was playing with Ryan Johansson on the top line with Arvidsson Forsberg was down with Duchesne or up, or, and you know, who knows which line is first or second. I don't think you can read into any of that stuff. Obviously, today the team will be split into two separate, you know, the half the roster in game one, half the roster in game two. So you can't read too much into the what Peter Laviolette's doing in practice, right? It's just not. But there is more flexibility. If Kyle Turris is going to play wing this year, does that get him going? That's an interesting development. But there's no place for Elie Tolvanen right now, not in the top six. Now, if you trade Kyle Turris, part of that process might be because you think Elie Tolvanen's ready to step in and play minutes. But you better have an answer, because right now there's not a lot of space outside of a fourth line winger, which is Pitlick and some of these other guys, and maybe third defense pairing. I mean, right now Fabro's penciled in as a starter. You still have Weber and Irwin. There's no room for Jeremy Davies or Alex Carrier right now. So, and Davies, by the way, I think is the one to watch on defense. I think he's the one who's going to move the quickest through the system and be the closest to playing earliest.
Funny you mentioned Dante Fabro, because PK Subban is now gone, and you look at this team, and granted you're surrounded by guys like Matias Ekholm and Ryan Ellis, Roman Josi, but as good as Fabro was on such a small sample size last year, I'm curious to see how he withstands an 82-game season. Because, D-Mace, it's a lot like in the NFL. When you're a rookie, can you hold up for 16 games, or do you hit that, quote, rookie wall?
Yeah, and you know, that's the question that, I mean, obviously he's going to have to answer. And he will. Either he will produce or he won't. Sometimes we get so caught up on, you know, okay, he produced in such a small window. And if he plays more, that means he will get better and he will produce more. Well, sometimes it doesn't work that way. Sometimes playing the least amount of minutes works in your favor, because if you try to play more, then those weaknesses you have tend to show up. It's just like a rookie. You know, when he starts off the season, he's great. But then he hits week, you know, 7 or 8, then, you know, all those weaknesses that he had starts to show up, because now he's tired and his college season is basically over with, and now he's going into another college season. His body's just not ready for it, nor is his mind ready for a long, grueling season. It could be the same way, you know, in this situation where, you know, playing, you know, the least amount of minutes helps you, but then are you ready for an expanded role on this team? Well, only the Predators know that, and we will not know until we actually see it happen.
The other thing I'm really looking forward to this year is when you look at the Joffe line, and we know what Victor Arvidsson did last year and what that line has collectively become, but there's also the Philip Forsberg factor, because, and I've said this on this show many times, I think from a pure talent and skill, now it doesn't necessarily always show up in the stat sheet. Some of it is his own undoing. Some of it is the way this team is structured. I think he's one of the 10 or 12 most gifted players on the planet. When does that actually result in the point total column?
Yeah, I know that's – I mean, we have this discussion with the Titans, right? We talk about the Titans' style of play, and well, what does it matter if you win, right? Well, football, maybe it's different. In hockey, everything's a little bit more fast-paced. Certainly, the hiring of Peter Laviolette was designed to up the tempo on offense. That was David Poile seeing where the NHL was going, hiring a coach to kind of bring them into the modern era of hockey. But, like, it's still sort of like the Titans, right? Like, even though they hired LaFleur and they hired these guys to try to modernize the NFL offense, like, there's still an identity, right? There's still a core foundation of the Titans that doesn't allow them to become this freak show offensive thing, and some of that's personnel limitations. That's not the case with the Preds. The personnel limitations shouldn't be the problem. It's just that they are, at their foundation, they are still a defensive-first, blue-line-activated team with a great goaltender. Like, that's still who they are. And so I don't know, like, I don't think this team wants to play 6-4 games for the whole season. It can if it has to, but that may always limit Philip Forsberg's point total. I'm with you. Some of it needs to be him. Some of it needs to be him deciding, I'm going to be a superstar and I'm going to score 50 goals this year.
See, but it's funny, you don't think they want to play 6-4 games. I would counter with saying, well, they can't keep leaning on their goaltender. Especially when we get to the point of the season where we know April, May, and June, they're like, forget it. October, November, December, January, February, March, yeah. But we get to April, May, and June when it really matters. I don't want to have all the pressure on a 35-year-old goaltender feeling like he has to be darn near flawless every night.
No, but where is this? Where has this organization, since the day it started in the late 90s here in this building right where we're sitting, although I don't think this room was here, it's about the blue line. It's always been about the blue line. They built from the blue line from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And even this roster now with this coaching staff and this administration sort of going out and acquiring offensive talent like they've never done before, right, over the last three or four seasons, right? They went out and traded for Ryan Johansson. They spent huge dollars on – they got – and technically they acquired Philip Forsberg, right, in trade. They give big money to Forsberg and Arvidsson. They're paying Kyle Turris. They go out and acquire Mikael Granlund. They go out and pay for Matt Duchene. All that being said, they still want their core foundational structure to be built from the blue line. And it's about Roman Josi, Matias Ekholm. Now Dante Fabbro takes over for P.K. Subban and Ryan Ellis. That is still their, you know, the root of their existence, right, is still based in playing great blue line hockey. And that's been the way since the late 90s. The Titans are the same thing. It's about running the football and playing great defense. That's been their, that's the way that organization has sort of been founded. And it's hard to kind of break from that. And, oh, by the way, it's a good way to win games, playing great defense, having great blue line in hockey, or playing great defense in the NFL. It's how you win games. So I don't think breaking from that foundation is ever going to happen. It doesn't mean that Forsberg doesn't need to take some personal accountability and say, you know what, I need to take over more. I need to dominate more, because we've seen him do it in flashes. Now he needs to do it for 82 games and put up like a 90-point season. It doesn't have to be like 120, but put up like an 80-point season where you're almost a point-per-game guy. That would be a huge step in the right direction.
Don't forget, today, a lunch special at Pete and Terry's beginning at 11 o'clock today, where you can get a bacon cheeseburger and a draft beer right where we are at today for $12.50. We will come back with Carl Taylor, the head coach of the Milwaukee Admirals. That's next, live here on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are live today from Pete and Terry's Tavern at Bridgestone Arena. The big finish is coming up in just about 15 minutes. But right now, we welcome in Carl Taylor, the head coach of your Milwaukee Admirals, joins us here on the show. Coach, good morning. How are you?
Good morning as well. I'm doing great, thanks.
Hey, Coach, I know you love every collection of players that you work with, but this particular group that you're going to have this year, it does look like there is far more depth and talent in the farm system in this offseason than we had a year before, 2 years before. David Poile and the staff doing a great job of kind of replenishing that. Part of that was the P.K. Subban trade, also a big draft class with lots of bodies. Sort of break down where you see this roster at. Some of those guys may make the big club. Many of them are going to come play with you. Maybe some go play elsewhere. Just sort of your thoughts on, in general, the state of the system right now relative to maybe the past couple years.
Well, I would say based on last year, we had a great group in Milwaukee. We had a great season. We really enjoyed our group. You are absolutely correct when you look at the roster, and if you watch the prospect tournament and been around, saw those three games, we have much more depth up front as far as prospect type players and also on the back end. So it should be an exciting year. As far as who's going to be where, that'll all shake out. I've learned over years, just wait and see once the big boys get going, and then the cream will rise to the top here over these next few exhibition games.
Coach, anybody specifically that stood out to you in the rookie showcase?
Well, there's no question that Pitlick and Tolvanen had a great outlook. They did a great job as far as producing and looked like they had some chemistry together. And then you would be overlooking if you didn't talk about Jeremy Davis on the back end. We acquired him in a trade, and he looks like a legit player. He's got outstanding puck skills. He's always got his heads up. He's always skating with speed, with pace. And both Nashville and Milwaukee want to play with pace. So he's the type of player we wanted to add to our organization.
You know, Carl, I remember years ago I had a minor league baseball manager on my radio show, and I asked him this question. I want to ask this to you as well, because I find it fascinating, because I would think the job and the goal for you is to develop the minor league talent so that they can make their way to the big program. And along the way, you want to win games, certainly, but what is that balance of developing the guys in the system as opposed to the end result, wins and losses, day in and day out in Milwaukee?
This is the old chicken and the egg question, but it's asked every year. But there's no question our main priority is to build talent develop their young guys, help them get to the National Hockey League quicker. With the way the salary cap is, you can add entry-level players onto your roster at the NHL level. You're allowing yourself to spend more money further up the lineup. So it's a critical part and critical piece of the organization. Balancing the winning, hey, I'm a coach. We're paid to win. If we don't win enough, then it's hard to get that next job. So 100% there's a balance there. And the thing I try to express to our players is that early in the season, we're going to give everyone lots of opportunity. And there might be some development mistakes that happen there. You put some young guys into positions that you're a little nervous about, but you have to live with them early. And hopefully they develop and learn from those experiences so that as you end the stretch run in the spring and you're sprinting to the finish for playoffs, hopefully they develop that you're comfortable putting them in their spot. But when you get to that last March, April, and hitting in the playoffs, it's all about winning.
Coach Jeremy Davies is a guy that when the PK Subban trade was announced, you immediately start studying him, and his game really stands out. Great skater, fits the mold of what a Predators defenseman is sort of supposed to be. Give us a quick scouting report on him, and what can fans expect to see from him this year?
Well, I think he's an elite player, and you know he's currently battling for a roster spot with Nashville, so we'll see how he plays out here. But he's great with the puck. I love how he turns it up the ice. Yeah, he plays with pace. His puck skills are outstanding, sees the ice well, has good vision. But the thing with him is it's a difficult thing when the big boys jump into the group after the prospect tournament. Some guys get a little nervous or a little shy. Jeremy looks like a very confident individual who feels like his game is ready for the next step. So that confidence is a hard thing to come by, but he seems to be a guy that has it. And I think that goes a long way in allowing him to show the individual talent that he has. If that confidence flies on you, then you're trying to chase the game, and he's definitely not chasing it today.
Carl Taylor, the head coach of the Milwaukee Admirals, we appreciate a couple of minutes. Best of luck this season, Coach, and we'll talk to you down the road.
All right, thanks a lot, guys. Have a great day.
You got it. Carl Taylor joining us here on Morning Drive. A big finish coming up at 9:45. But right now, let's give away some tickets. If you want a pair of tickets to see Nashville SC take on the Pittsburgh Riverhounds at Tennessee Park on Saturday, September the 21st, just be caller number 5 right now, 615-737-1025. Caller 5, 615-737-1025. You'll get a pair of tickets for Nashville SC and the Pittsburgh Riverhounds on Saturday, September the 21st. All right, so big stories of the weekend, obviously Saturday, early start, the Vols roll over UT Chattanooga 45-0. But for a duration of the show today, obviously talking about the Titans' loss to the Colts 19-17 yesterday. And boys, I saw the line come out yesterday around 5:30. The Titans are a 2.5-point road favorite at Jacksonville on Thursday night. I'm telling you right now, I'm not going to give a prediction because we'll do that, but it's a short week, so we'll do that tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday. But if they don't beat the Jaguars, and I said this to you, Mace, yesterday going down the elevator, I'm going to run on the 24 into traffic.
Uh-huh.
If they lose to Gardner stinking Minshew on Thursday night, I'm going to be so disgusted.
Well, that Gardner, he has had two good games for a guy, well, 1.5 good games, for a guy that had to come in relief for Nick Foles, who got injured and will miss majority of the season.
And he is not short on confidence.
Exactly.
I want my 3-year-old and my 1-year-old to grow up with Gardner Minshew's confidence.
Yeah, the kid. And so don't just take it for granted, because you might be running down 24.
And here's the concern. Here's the concern. What's going to fix the Titans' offensive line against that defense?
Yeah.
Like what? Now, you guys saw Jalen Ramsey blow up on his coaching staff on the sideline. Now, there's an implosion factor with Jacksonville that could be happening. But what about the Titans' offensive line performance in 2 weeks tells you they're going to stop anything that they do? Now, what they can do is they can line up and run Derrick Henry, because that has worked against Jacksonville every year Derrick Henry's been on this team. They have owned the Jacksonville Jaguars. Last year they went down there and won a game 9-6 without Marcus's ability to throw the football forward. Like, they had to run the football, and Marcus ran the football for like 50.
It's definitely going to be low scoring.
Like, low scoring, conservative game plan. If they don't turn the ball over, let the Jags make the mistakes like the Titans did yesterday, I think you can go down there and win. And this is one of those where a short, because you lost in sort of mental, embarrassing fashion, this is where the short week might help you. It's early in the year. because you're not dragging like you would be in week 13 or 14, so you're still fresh, and you're coming off a loss where you should be pissed off for greatness. There could be an element of the short week helps them here. Then it gives them a bye week before the Falcons, a mini bye before the Falcons.
Well, we'll see, because they can't afford the Tennessee Titans to fall 0-2 in the division, knowing that they got Indy in Indy later in the season. They got to play Houston basically in almost like back-to-back weeks toward the end of the season.
So Deshaun Watson could be missing an arm
exactly,
and a leg
so,
and eyeball.
Then you got Jacksonville back here at home later in the season. So this is a critical game for the Tennessee Titans.
It's huge.
And if they can't get this one, it's going to be very hard for them moving forward.
You kept Baker Mayfield and that offense to 13 points. You held Jacoby Brissett to 19 points. You can't allow Gardner Minshew to get to 20.
Yeah.
There's no way Jacksonville should score 20 points offensively. They might get one on defense or special teams.
And they scored 12 yesterday against Houston. Houston won with 13 points. Again, I know the Titans had tons of mistakes and their offense looked putrid yesterday. I'm sorry. Aside from a couple of teams, the NFL offensively was awful this week. Awful. Mitch Trubisky, terrible. Phillip Rivers wasn't that good. Mariota wasn't good. Cousins was terrible. Stafford, Wentz, Winston, Newton, Flacco. So many bad quarterbacks. Good players playing poorly this week on offense. Deshaun Watson managed 13 points. You know, I know Jackson was good on defense, but this was a low-scoring week. The guys who were great, Russell Wilson was great this weekend. Tom Brady was great against the Dolphins. Lamar Jackson was great, but again, he's played two CFL teams in Miami and Arizona. I'm not sure those are real football teams. So, again, Lamar's been great. I just think quarterbacking this week was questionable across the league, including Marcus Mariota.
The Big Finish is coming up next here on Morning Drive.
We've had a big show.
Big show!
And now it's time for a Big Finish on Morning Drive.
Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Good to have you in live here on a Monday as we are at Pete and Terry's Tavern, Bridgestone Arena. Good stuff today, and it's 9:45, so it is now time for the Big Finish. And we welcome you into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5, The Game, broadcasting live this morning from Pete and Terry's Tavern at Bridgestone Arena. Happy Monday.
I think we need this. I think we need this to cheer us up today a little bit.
Need Pete, what?
A tavern.
Oh, yeah, the tavern,
We need a tavern to cheer
need to
us
see
up.
Pete and Terry's face.
One of my favorite watering holes. Got the Fur Hat Authority, Kathy and Isaac and the whole bunch here before every game. I think the city needs a little cheering up, maybe a little hockey in their life for a few minutes to forget what
okay.
took place yesterday in this city.
We got some good, some bad, some just downright
ugly.
Ugly.
Not
yeah.
sure how much good there was. Now, Terry Crist mug?
Bad and ugly.
Not ugly at all. Not ugly whatsoever. Terry Crist, that man has never looked ugly. Very handsome.
Terry, Pete, I need a double Tito's immediately.
To me, this was a missed opportunity. As a franchise, as a team, as a collective, they had a chance to go 2-0. They had control of the game for largely three quarters. They had the possession up going into the fourth quarter, dominating the game largely. Didn't mean they weren't making some mistakes and weren't executing at a high level, but they had control. They were the better team and then decided in a lot of different ways to give it away.
That game was never in control by the Tennessee Titans. That game was just an ebb and flow, back and forth, back and forth. Not once did I think the Tennessee Titans had an opportunity to basically run away with the game. To me, there were points in the game where, yes, they were, from a defensive standpoint, they were in control of things, but the offense was never in flow. They looked a little bit too erratic. They looked at times like they didn't know what they wanted to do. The head coach made another blunder, I felt, yesterday in the game. The Titans, when they walked in that building, when the game first kicked off, that was a team, to me, and it is just to me, that didn't seem as if they were focused enough to play that football game.
Try to make sense of yesterday's debacle at Nissan, and I'm not even talking about the pyrotechnics scorching the field. The actual debacle.
I'm glad we've avoided that, because that's going to be the lead for everybody. And I'm glad we've avoided that.
When I saw that fire, I thought Stillman spontaneously combusted, like on the side of it. Corey Curtis from News 2.
The Titans want to go from good to great, and they're just not there yet. The
because good to great means following up one good win with another one, one good performance with another one, and this is just the pattern that we've seen before, not coming up with the same performance week in and week out.
Preds fans are so focused on Duchesne because it probably cost him PK that I think people are going to look at him and probably put too much on his shoulders and say, well, it's about what Matt Duchesne does, and I don't think that's fair to him as a player.
It's going to be talked about, or it's going to hinge on whether he does well or not. If he doesn't, then people are going to continue to point at that move. Why did you trade PK away to get him?
If I'm him, I'm just like, you know what? Get a couple of goals the first couple of weeks, and then let the fan base yell at Kyle Turris. I'm good. They'll just direct their vitriol that way. That's fine.
Also, a guy that's going to take too much of the blame, like
as he should.
Well, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that if they play poorly, they don't deserve blame. Everybody
but they
does.
Didn't win or lose because
of
Kyle Turris.
Right? They're not going to win a cup because Kyle Turris. They're not going to lose a cup because.
But
Kyle
you
Turris.
Know, coming up at 2 o'clock, pay what you owe.
Yeah,
pay what you owe. Floyd, actually, Floyd, I can't take it.
No,
pay what you owe.
No,
I don't know if my girls would actually be skilled skaters in the world of hockey, but there's one thing that I know they would be really, really good at. If they ever joined like an all-female hockey team. They would be the goons.
The checking line?
Yeah. They would drop their gloves and throw haymakers.
Well, let me ask you, though, because they both have – you have twin girls that are 5 years old, right? So, yeah. But they have very different personalities. You've always said one is sort of like a terrorist and one is sort of a princess, right?
Correct.
Is that true?
Correct.
Now, so we want the terrorist on the fourth line.
Yes.
And we want the princess on the power play.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I kind of have like a Brian Boyle and a Rocco Grimaldi as my daughters.
When I look out there in the third quarter and there's more empty seats, shame on you. You're a fair weather fan. You're not there and you're not supporting that team, okay? I get it. It was hot. But that was a game from start to finish. And maybe, just maybe, they could have used your help at making the stadium really loud for the Indianapolis Colts. Indy loved it. Because you know why? They could hear their signals being called. They can hear everything. They had no problem with going up to the line of scrimmage and making their calls. You know why? Because half of y'all left in the third quarter when the game was still tight. Matter of fact, I think the tights were up and you left, okay?
That was their best quarter.
Shame on you for leaving the stadium. Shame on you.
We welcome in our buddy Chris Mason. Before we actually talk some pucks and sticks here, I need to know how many takes it took for you to do that latest video where you're sitting on your porch having a conversation with your alter ego.
Oh, my God. I'll tell you, my wife is so embarrassed of me. I was walking around the house and I caught my kids are embarrassed, too. I pretty much embarrassed my family, but you know what? It was worth it.
That's the video that gets them embarrassed, not any of the other ones? That was the one?
No, trust me. I feel like I don't do a good job if I don't embarrass my family, so it's constant.
Attaboy.
They're constantly embarrassed of me, so I think that's just part of being a good husband and a father as far as I'm concerned.
Alright, so a Louisiana mother was arrested after her 11-year-old brought THC lace gummies to school and shared them with her classmates.
I mean, show and tell must have been awesome. Show and tell on TCS.
Like, this is a pencil. It writes. And everyone's like, whoa.
Shame on you.
And that was indeed the Morning Drive Daily Rewind, and it's a part of the Big Finish, and it's brought to you by
Nashville SC. Inaugural season tickets for the MLS season that begins next season on sale today. The website, NashvilleSC.com. Want to also remind you, ESPN 94.9 Game 2 is the official English radio home of the Nashville Soccer Club. Listen in tomorrow night as Nashville SC takes on Birmingham at First Tennessee Park. Pregame begins at 6:45. Kickoff at 7 o'clock only on ESPN 94.9 Game 2, powered by your Middle Tennessee Toyota dealers.
All right, let's get to what we learned today.
Now, what we learned today.
I learned that Nashville, Tennessee, and sports fans in this town that are fair weather, it's literally fair weather. It's literally... If it's too cold, we're not going. If it's too hot, we're not going. We are literally fair weather fans, which is not what that phrase is supposed to actually mean. But it actually means it for Nashville, Tennessee.
And D-Mace won't tolerate it.
No, I won't. I won't. That's what I know is that I won't tolerate it. You can't be a fair weather friend, literally a fair weather fan. You can't be one of those people.
I'm a fair weather friend also.
Yeah, fair weather friend. You can't be a fair weather friend or a fair weather fan. Get out there and support your Titans.
All right, quickly before we wrap things up tonight, Monday Night Football, a pair of 0-1 teams. The Browns take on the Jets. Cleveland almost a 7-point road favorite. Ooh. Because your boy's been out kissing other girls and eating off of bad spoons.
Wow. Sharing Coke, sharing soda pops in the locker room with all the other guys. Sam Darnold with mono, and it's probably going to be, I would assume, 2 or 3 weeks. It'll be interesting to see what Cleveland does because they're an interesting team. But you got two Preds home games tonight, so if you want to wash the taste out of your mouth from yesterday as a Titans fan, come on down. I'll be here, by the way, at 3:30, bringing the little 3-year-old. Chance to watch some of the guys today. It's going to be a lot of fun to get the Preds back on the ice.
All right, Darren, Donick, and Chase are coming up next. And don't forget, they'll have a lunch special starting at 11 o'clock today here at Pete and Terry's Tavern. A bacon cheeseburger and a beer for $12.50. Happy hour starts at 3. Jared and Floyd will be out here. The doors for the arena open today at 2 o'clock. We will see you tomorrow back in the studio. Well, we won't see you, but we'll talk to you and you'll hear us on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Bailey, DJ Nashville, I love you.